Mecca, Saturday, January 28th, 2017. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, got a very fun episode for you today because it has been a while since we've had our friends Victor Cahiao, David Sparks, and Ken Ray on the show. This is one of the episodes that we call our Amigos episodes. Dave, Victor, and Ken are all very good friends of mine. We've formed a friendship over the years through podcasting and through our interest, of course, in Mac and Apple stuff. If you've heard these episodes before, you know it's a lot of fun. If you haven't, you're in for a treat. I like to get these guys on every once in a while because it's just fun to be able to bounce ideas and talk about a lot of the things that we've been talking about here between us in the MacCast community with some other podcasters, with some other Mac fans, enthusiasts, and just relatively good pundits in this community. So I sat down with these guys. I wanted to talk to them a little bit about Apple's strategy for Apple Music and content, and what that may look like going forward. We talked a little bit about Apple in 2016 and in 2017, what we saw happen and what we're hoping to see happen. And then also we got into a little bit about Siri and some of the stories we've been hearing about Apple maybe working on improving or enhancing Siri in the next version of iOS. And then we finished up with some things of the moment. So I got those guys to pick a couple of their favorite things that they've been playing with, using, enjoying over the past, you know, few months or so. So we got some great picks for you, great content. We will get into all of that here in just a moment. But before we do, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. It is a great way to get some great meals, to do some cooking at home, and it just brings a lot of convenience. Some of the things that actually I've been enjoying most about the Blue Apron service, me and my family, as a matter of fact, is that convenience. We really have kind of hectic lives, and I think we're no different than a lot of people, right? Hectic lives, busy schedules, especially if you have a family, you've got different things going on, and it's not always easy to kind of sit down and plan, shop for meals. It's just, it can be difficult, and Blue Apron makes it easy for us to be able to have home-cooked meals and do it on our schedule. We can go on the service, schedule the day we want to have our food delivered, and you can change that. You can adjust it. So if your schedules change, you can go in each week and kind of change that. And then when we are ready to cook, we have all the ingredients, all the seasonings, everything we need to prepare a great meal is already included. It's all portioned out. We just have to prep and cook. And so that helps really fit into our busy schedule. And another thing we're really enjoying about it is the portion sizes seem to be perfect, and all the ingredients that you get, you're getting just what you need to make the meal, so you're not wasting food. Very often, we'll find we've bought a bunch of produce, and some of it goes to waste because you don't get around to maybe using it all. And with Blue Apron, that's not happening. And then just the general quality and freshness of the ingredients that we get has been wonderful. They say they source everything locally, so it comes direct to you. It's not sitting around in warehouses or on trucks for weeks at a time, so you know what you're getting is fresh and locally sourced, and that comes through in the quality of what we've been receiving. And just the choices and variety are also great. Each week, they select meals from the menu they think you're going to enjoy, but you can actually go into your account, look at what's available, and then change that. You have a couple different options, and the ability to do that has been really nice because we have some picky eaters, you know, maybe some things that certain members of our family don't like, and we're always able to find something within the week's worth of recipes that we think everybody is going to enjoy. And then when you get the food, they include the recipes, so those are easy to follow along. It's easy to prep stuff, but if you find a meal that you particularly like, you have the ability to make it again. And so we're actually growing our menu of choices which deals with that other problem of trying to figure out each week what we're going to have. So all of those things together have made the Blue Apron service really, really great and enjoyable for our family. And best of all, if you'd like to check it out, you can try Blue Apron for free. You can check out this week's menu. You can get your first 3 meals free along with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/maccast. That's blueapron.com/maccast. And you're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. And a big thank you to Blue Apron for supporting the MacCast. All right, let's get in here. Let's talk to our friends Victor, Dave, and Ken about some of the latest things going on in the Mac community. So here we are back again. I want to welcome you guys. Thanks for coming on to do another Amigos show. We've got David Sparks, Victor Cajiao, and Ken Ray. How are you guys doing? And this is going to be chaotic because I just asked you all to respond at the same time.
Order of the way he called us.
There you go.
I am super happy to be with my amigos.
It's been way too long.
So here I am. Let's do it.
Yep.
Yep. I couldn't be happier either. I mean, I could be, but not for free.
I was going to say I could be happier, but, you know, that's sort of a rude thing to say.
Right. Right.
Especially after David starts up. I couldn't be happier than being here. You know, it's like, well, I could, you know.
Yeah.
There are other things. I could be at Disney.
Now you're making me reconsider, Ken.
Nice. Yay.
Except the three of us could probably be at Disneyland in a couple hours. It might take you a little while longer, Ken.
That's true. That's true. I'm just saying, I mean, you guys, no offense, I'd be happier at Disneyland. I could get to, no, actually, because you guys would fly and I would drive. I was going to say I'd get to Orlando before you. I could go to Disney World, but I'd want my car. So, yeah.
No, I'm about an hour away, and Victor and Dave are even closer.
Mm-hmm. I have an apartment there now.
Do you?
Just live there.
Did you take over Walt's old apartment? Is that
I think he might not be joking. Anyway, thanks for coming on. We're going to jump into, I think what I did this time around was I grabbed a bunch of things. I was telling these guys in the pre-show for everybody else who wasn't there, that there were a lot of topics that I'm kind of curious to get your guys' take on, because when I do my show, it's me and my community, and the community's great about getting back to me, but it's a little delayed gratification. So it's always fun when we get to do these episodes, because I've got that two-way conversation going on. And one of the things I've been kind of interested in and thinking about lately, only because it's come up in the news, but I had been thinking about this for a long time, and it's sort of Apple's strategies surrounding not just Apple Music, although that's part of this, but just media services, media content in general. And this is all predicated, a lot of people have heard stories about some of the Apple Music folks went out and did some interviews, including Jimmy Iovine and Bozema St. John and
yeah, that other guy.
The DJ guy. When I just like
totally Zane Lowe.
Zane Lowe, yes.
Yeah, because there was another interview with some other guy though that I had never heard of before.
Right.
And sorry to bring him up because I still don't know his name. But it's like I read it and I was like, wow, who's this guy? And then yeah.
So there were kind of two stories. There were two stories. So there was the Apple Music people all out doing the interviews, and what was interesting is they had always, I think they'd obviously been prepped pretty good by Apple marketing. Well, I guess they're all marketing people anyway, right? But they all basically said the same thing, that Apple Music is, they want it to be something beyond just music, more of a pop culture experience, I think was quoted by Iovine, and that other guy both almost said word for word verbatim the same sort of quote. Mm-hmm. And so what do you guys, was that surprising to anybody? To me, it kind of wasn't too surprising. But it got me thinking about, well, I mean, what does that actually mean? Are we talking about, you know, in my generation, what MTV went through in the 90s and in 2000s, where it was about music and then it suddenly wasn't?
I mean, the surprising part for me is that it took them this long to get around to the idea that Apple is a content company. For so long, they've been the delivery mechanism.
Right.
And they had that tied up so well that it seemed only natural that they would get into content. I bet Ken probably has some pretty good ideas about, you know, whether it was like competition or problems with their partners, but everybody else is doing this stuff, and it seems like Apple should be getting in there too.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I'm trying to figure out how it's going to work. Like, if they do video for Apple Music, like, do the carpool karaoke thing, right? Carpool karaoke has been such a huge hit because it went viral.
Right.
And is Apple going to be cool with it going viral? I mean, they have their own channels and stuff like that. So, I mean, they have their own YouTube channel. They could, like, seed stuff out there and then try to get people to come in. I'm actually wondering if this is more like a... Like, they've converted everybody. They've picked the low-hanging fruit, maybe. You know, if you were turned on by how cool the iPhone was, then you got an iPhone. And now you're in their ecosystem. And even if the, you know, Samsung S8 looks amazing, I mean, you're so deep in their ecosystem now. Even if you wanted to jump out, it would be so incredibly hard to do. So, I mean, so are these plays, like, for the people who, for whatever reason, have not come over this way yet? Because, I mean... You're right. Everybody else is doing this, but I can get all of that stuff on my iPhone anyway. I'm trying to think of what I can't get. I can't think of anything that's out there right now that I can't go ahead and get on my iPhone as well. Like the Spotify, well, Rhapsody, except now it's called Napster. Everything else. I mean, I can already get everything. So I'm not sure. I mean, is it just about picking up, I don't want to say the crumbs, but it's about picking up the people that have been sort of harder to sway at this point.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, but I'm also thinking, I mean, you've got, and I had to actually, literally, I just had to Google this because I thought it existed, but I really wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. Apple Music is on Android, right?
Yes.
So it could just be about content and wanting to push more Apple Music subscriptions. I mean, a lot of the analysis has been, well, this is how Apple differentiates itself from, say, Spotify or some of their other competitors, although Spotify, I think, is in some ways doing video, although really only mostly through, I think, their sort of podcasting thing. I don't think they're talking about the kinds of content that we're hearing rumored right now, where Apple is looking at different kinds of series or video content through Apple Music. And the only weird thing about the Apple Music platform and using that is, I think, Dave, you sort of alluded to it, for me, it's like, how do you fit this stuff in, and how do you present it under the guise of Apple Music? And they've already played around with this a little bit, because there's been a few shows. They did a thing with one of their content partners, Vice. It was a two-part documentary about.
It's supposed to be six. There are two about Reservation Rap, but yeah, the one I can't remember now because it's been so long since they announced it. The one that I was most interested in hasn't hit yet. I want to say, like, maybe it was EDM out of Iceland or something like that.
That'd be cool.
I mean, they're doing like this whole like globe trotting thing. It's not just here in the States, although the first two were the ones that took place up in the reservations up in the Badlands.
Yeah, but I think the challenge they have is that stuff's incredibly hard to find. Like, they've been putting some of this stuff out, but they're not doing a very great job of promoting it. Something I really enjoyed was the 808 documentary. And you could kind of get to that if you knew to go check, like, the Beats One blog, you know, like, blog or something like that. It was, like, really weird. I'm sure it probably showed up on Apple's Facebook and maybe in their Twitter stream. I don't follow Apple Music on Twitter. So it was interesting, Ken, to hear your take on, you know, is this a way to sort of get people from other social and maybe shared places into Apple Music?
There's two things also I kind of think about this. One is just kind of Wall Street revenue stuff. For the longest time, Apple said all these services were just a way to supplement and encourage people to buy their hardware. And in the last year or so, they're increasingly talking about this stuff as revenue sources.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's part of it. And the other thing is, and this is the kind of the hippie part, you know, Apple for a long time now, for lack of a better word, has been a cool brand, you know, and I think part of being cool is coming out with interesting content now. I mean, you don't want Apple to be the product that everybody's parents use, right? So if they want to connect with people, they're going to have to get content that younger people are interested in.
Yeah, but are they, Victor, what's your, because I want to think about that for a second. But Victor, before we get to that, what's your take on all this?
You know, I've been scratching my head here. I've been admittedly out of the country and out of state for a long time here in the last 40 days or so. So I may not be as hip to this whole conversation as I should be. But I'll say what I'm thinking anyways. And that is that it just seems to me like Apple is doing a grab on this culture thing. And it just reeks of this memories of Ping for me, you know, just a little too late. You know, and it's just like, oh, we're trying to be the hip kids. But they're not, in my opinion, unless this offering that we're talking about, and this is where you guys will have to correct me if I'm out of the loop, includes bringing mainstream video, such as Netflix is doing, Amazon, you know, Academy Award nominated Amazon now. You know, if that's what we're talking about, then this is a weird avenue to introduce a mass audience or a culture shift towards that, because the culture, as far as I'm concerned, they're already there. They're in Amazon, they're in Netflix. That's where they're going to get that content, and that's where the hipness is. So what hipness are they bringing to the table that is going to draw that audience away from these other sources? That's what I'm scratching my head about here, Adam.
So, yeah, can I ask you're hitting on the second part of this. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I wanted to know, when you said bring in mainstream content, Victor, do you mean like go out and sign deals with content that's already being produced? Or do you mean can they take their content mainstream? Because, I mean, one of the big complaints about Netflix right now is the fact they don't have nearly as many big movies as they used to have. And yet people are still paying what they're paying every month because Netflix is turning out some really amazing series at this point. They got the Marvel stuff. They've got House of Cards. They've got Stranger Things, other stuff that's escaping me right at the moment. It's, Amazon, as you pointed out, Amazon is Academy Award nominated Amazon now. So, I mean, they're not going out. Are you saying can they actually make content that good?
I'm saying is that what we're talking about them doing? Because if it's just this niche market that's related to music documentaries and you know, concerts and that kind of a thing, then I'm a little bit more skeptical about its ability to succeed. And that's where I bring in the old, you know, the ugly Ping memories. But if we're talking about Apple really going after mainstream media, original content, as well as being able to bring people like Jerry Seinfeld that just went over to Netflix and attract that kind of content into a space, then I think they would have more success. But they're in my opinion, if this is what they're going for, they're late on this one. Again, my two cents.
So the answer is yes, Victor. Apparently, according to rumors, there was a piece in Variety and it was reported several places, actually, that Apple has been out talking to Hollywood producers, talking to people about trying to acquire and find what they would call scripted TV shows and potentially movies. Now, how far into those conversations Apple is and what their plans for that content is still kind of way out there. So, both these rumors together get very interesting. The question becomes, you know, is Apple Music going to remain this sort of separate sort of like MTV part channel, pop culture, music focused part of a bigger plan for like original content? And if they do bring it all together, does it all fall under my Apple Music subscription? Is it a whole separate service that, right, you know, they tried to do the deals with the cable companies and that didn't work. So now they're going to move in the Netflix, Amazon direction. And, you know, I don't know what to make of that because I had never been very keen on Apple getting into the, hey, let's make our own shows and go against Netflix and Amazon thing. And now that we're starting to hear about that, I'm a little conflicted on how to feel about it because I'm kind of excited about the idea with Apple and its, you know, big bank account maybe doing that. But at the same time, I would agree, like Amazon and Netflix seem to have such a lead in that area. It seems like it might be money and time better well spent sort of getting that content more integrated into Apple's distribution system. Kind of going back to what you mentioned earlier, Dave, where, you know, Apple's always been sort of this distribution mechanism for content and not really about creating that kind of stuff.
Can I throw two things in?
Absolutely.
Don't forget about the TV app.
Right.
I think Apple might be taking the TV app really seriously. And I'm assuming that any video, like if I'm hooked into Apple Music, I'm assuming and I haven't really tried it out in a while. I'm assuming that any video that goes into Apple Music, if I'm a subscriber to Apple Music, then it has a chance of showing up on the what to watch, you know, thing.
I would hope so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They might even push that as not as an ad necessarily, but they might push that as a thing of like, hey, you know, you could watch this if you gave us $10 more a month. Second thing is, I mean, I don't think it's an up against kind of thing. I'm embarrassed now. I mean, I don't have cable. Like, I really don't have cable now, as opposed to when I used to say I don't have cable, but I had like three channels. And I realized, man, I'm just really paying too much for that. I'm getting rid of cable, like, seriously. But I'm paying for like four different services. And it's the same thing as like when you have cable and you have HBO and you have Showtime, or when you have HBO and you have, you know, whatever other thing, or you have HBO and you buy your sports packages, right? Mm-hmm. You don't just have cable, you have cable, and then you pay a little bit more for this, a little bit more for that. So, I mean, Apple may be throwing in these different video things just to try to get another $10 off me. I don't think they're going up against Netflix in the same way that I don't think Netflix is going up against Stars. I think that's the way Wall Street sees it. And certainly there's somebody at Netflix who wants to beat Stars, and there's somebody at Stars who wants to beat Netflix. But what I'm looking at is, okay, how much is all of this going to cost me? Who has the better content? Which one of these am I going to go with, right? I mean, it's not like if I have Apple Music that I no longer have Netflix. The last thing I would say, not the last thing, but the last thing I want to say right here, is if they spend $500 million on content, they only have over $200 billion left. So it's interesting to see people like, you know, sort of sweat this, because, I mean, they could make The Last Jedi and it would be a rounding error in their books. I mean, however much money that movie ends up costing, and it's going to be one of the most expensive movies this year, Apple could do that with money they've got in their back pocket. So, I mean, it's... this may be part of the thing that Apple does, which is, you know, like growing slowly into another thing. And they may have no idea how it's going to go. And it may, hopefully they don't go in like gigantic, because if they go in gigantic, then every single thing that happens is deemed a failure. If they grow video slowly, then, I mean, we might look around one day, same as we did with all the Apple stuff that we have. It used to be you had a Mac, and now... How many Apple things are on your desk? I mean, they may just grow slowly into all of a sudden, wow, all of my content, all of my news, all of my music, all of my video. I'm watching more Apple now than anything else. Yeah. But I don't think they would come in like, you know, saying this is how it's going to be. I think it would just be one of those things where you look up one day and it's like, wow, how'd that happen?
Yeah, this idea.
I think like go ahead. Well, I would say similarly, like Amazon. Amazon was making independent content for several years now. I never watched any of it until somebody said, oh, you should check out Mozart in the Jungle. And so I got my way into Amazon, watched it, and loved it. And now I have two or three shows on Amazon I watch. It's not a lot, but it's there. And I don't think it's too late. I mean, I think there's plenty of good ideas floating around for movies and miniseries. And the public is now starting to generally accept that you can really get quality, sometimes much better quality on the big screen, on the little screen, by these independently, you know, set up networks. And content developers, I can't see why they wouldn't want to make a deal with Apple. They've got a significant distribution network. You know, the check is going to clear, you know. So, you know, I could imagine there's some people out there with some pretty good ideas that if Apple came in the room and said, we want to feature you on all these Apple devices, that they probably would be interested in doing something.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I have a thought kind of playing on that. So if yours is directly related to what Dave was saying, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say really quickly, the other thing they might do is what Netflix did originally. I mean, Netflix did not start out, and still Netflix doesn't always, but they didn't start out producing their own content. I mean, there was stuff out there that they went and bought. I want to say their first Oscar nomination was for the documentary The Square. And Netflix saw that someplace. I want to say they saw it maybe at Sundance. I can't remember. But Netflix saw that someplace and bought the rights to it. And now suddenly Netflix is an executive producer of it. And so Netflix is Academy Award nominated.
Right.
And that happened without them. Right. Distribution wouldn't have happened in nearly the same way without them, without their, you know, gigantic bankroll. But, I mean, it's not like Apple has to, you know, build the studio and rig the lights and hire a director. I mean, they just have to keep their ear to the ground and be like, oh, I mean, James Corden was talking about spinning off Carpool Karaoke for months before Apple bought it. I remember reading that someplace. I thought it was kind of crazy, but okay.
See, I would feel a lot better about it if the James Cordens of the world were leading that effort for Apple. But when I'm seeing Iovine kind of speaking that, you know, I'm much more than just about music, or even Dr. Dre, that's where I get a little squirmish, because if I guess either I don't have the pulse on today's music, if I'm thinking, or if they're thinking that they represent the kids that are into that, I don't think they do. And so if that's their positioning, then I'm a little, you know, squirmish about that end of it. You know, get some other players involved in there that do better represent, in my opinion, you know, that generation, that is that YouTube generation that's going out there, and they need that satisfaction. But to have them, you know, heading it up and saying, we're going to bring this cultural experience to you, it just, I get the pangs all over again. I really do.
Yeah, just to kind of wrap up what I'm hearing, and I think a lot of things you guys have said, like, my hopes of this episode have already come true. You know, it just got me thinking about some things that I had not really considered. And this idea of Apple sort of, I think they are going to move slowly in terms of getting this content. And yeah, they probably don't have to catch up. A lot of people are saying, you know, are they going to go after Netflix? And I think you're kind of right on that, Ken. They really don't have to, because like Amazon, for Apple, any of this stuff is really a value add-on for the services they're already providing. So, you know, I don't get Amazon Prime Video because it's Amazon Prime Video. I get it because I like Amazon Prime for all the things that Amazon Prime gives me in terms of buying stuff from Amazon. And in the same way with this, I like having Apple Music and having the subscription. So anything they're going to continue to add to it is more of a value add and may draw in more people to have, you know, I'm going to have Apple Music and Amazon and Hulu or whatever my mix of content is, because, hey, they have this really cool show that I've heard about and I want to check that out. So I think that's probably exactly sort of dead on in terms of the strategy. And then, Victor, with the music stuff, I have a feeling that is just like I said, is going to be sort of run like the music MTV part of this like bigger concept of Apple doing all of this content. And I'm pretty convinced at this point, if this stuff all comes together, if they do start doing scripted shows and movies, it's all going to fall under the Apple Music dilemma. The only last thing I want to comment on that is it's funny to me, if that does happen, Apple has fallen into the same trap that they fell into with iTunes in early branding something that now has a label attached to it that doesn't meet the thing that it ultimately becomes, right? Mm-hmm. So Apple Music, but we've got TV shows and video. And so maybe again, Ken, like you mentioned earlier, that's why the TV app may be a very important piece of this whole sort of strategy.
It's also possible, though, that nobody cares. A&E, excuse me, used to stand for Arts and Entertainment, and the History Channel used to have history on it.
Right.
we don't care. I mean, we don't care anymore. Yeah, we'll just turn it on. And just, like, if there's a show there that I like, I don't, you know, Discovery Channel, you know, Discovery Channel, I shouldn't say that about. A&E is the one that honestly gets me, because they used to have, like, ballet and Shakespeare in the Park, and now they have The Real Housewives of whatever.
And they can always just fall back on Apple. Hey, I'm just going to watch or listen or consume that on Apple. Right.
Right. So. Exactly. That's a possibility. I actually thought about that. That's so funny. I forgot about that. But I thought about that earlier when I was looking over the notes for the show. Maybe you don't watch it on Apple Music anymore. Maybe you, as you say, just watch it on Apple. Like, you don't go to the Apple store. You go to Apple Walden Galleria. Or you go to, it's not Apple Computer anymore. It's Apple Inc.
It's just Apple. And so that gives me a good transition, because speaking of Apple, another thing I wanted to get your guys' take on was Apple in 2016 and sort of Apple in 2017. So a lot has been said about what people think Apple did in 2016. I'll just summarize for you guys in case you didn't hear me talk about it. In my opinion, it was kind of, especially when it came to the Mac, it was kind of a dud year. But overall, just product-wise, it was not the most exciting year for Apple. I'm not going to get down on them. The biggest highlight for me in 2016, and I didn't think they were going to make it, is the AirPods. I actually think that's an amazing product on a number of levels. But Let's get your take. I mean, Victor, how did you feel about Apple last year?
Well, I certainly had my apprehensions, especially around the Mac thing. And I had to kind of, think about that and sit on my hands for a while and not talk in order to come to a conclusion where I think they're just in that transitioning phase, if you will, of really refocusing their efforts on what's going to be really important in their computing space. And to me, that's going to be iMac and laptops. And they're going to, I believe they're going to leave it at that. And I'm okay with that today. I wasn't okay with that like October, November, December. I was having some real issues as an older Mac user, even though I'm relatively new compared to you guys. But I got over that. And I said, I think they're just refocusing. And so we have to, at least I've had to say, it's going to be goodbye to the Mac Pro. It's going to be goodbye to the Mac Mini. But at the end of the day, we're going to end up with MacBook Pros and iMacs that are going to be exceptional machines for the Apple user and that are going to much better blend into the entire ecosystem, which, of course, is now spearheaded and has been by the iPhone. So I'm much more at peace with what they're doing strategically there than I was, towards the last quarter of the year.
What do you think, Dave?
I think 2016, if there's an internal story that we don't know about, mm-hmm. I think it would be Project Titan. It's this car thing. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a tremendous amount of focus on that inside Apple for the last couple of years. And it started to see external signs of it in 2016. They had buildings and employees were disappearing from Tesla and showing up at Apple. And then suddenly that wasn't such a big deal. And there were layoffs and things going away. And I think that maybe something happened in Apple where they thought about this burden of the next big thing. I mean, Steve Jobs had it in some degrees easy. I mean, a phone is something everybody needs. How do you follow that up? The tablet and the watch are nice, but it's not something everybody needs. And I don't know. I think they were chasing that next big thing so hard. And I think at some point this year, they decided they weren't going to do that, at least with a car. So I think we may see increased focus back on the core products this year. I hope we do.
You think maybe they got a little distracted, a little over-obsessed with that?
Well, it's pretty clear that they were putting a lot of effort into an entirely new line of products that they've never made before, and now it appears they are not doing that so much. So I would assume that some focus comes back to the Mac. I haven't given up on the Mac Pro yet. I feel like there's another story there, but we may never know that one either. But the I don't know. Obviously, something went horribly wrong. But they hopefully we'll get something new out of them soon on the Mac Pro. But I'm not as much. Every time I talk about this stuff, I get emails telling me how I'm a Apple apologist and then how I'm an Apple hater. So it doesn't matter what
you
say.
You get it from both sides.
But I don't have as much aggravation with the MacBook Pro as a lot of people do for the type of work I do. It's a good computer, the new one.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I do. And the I don't know. I feel like they did a decent job with the Mac, and my biggest disappointment of 2016 was I feel like iOS on the iPad particularly didn't get enough power. I mean, the holdup is not the iPad anymore. It's the operating system. Well, if we want to be, using it to be more productive, they need to get more serious about giving us productive tools and operating system tools. And that was my biggest disappointment. I hope that changes.
It's interesting you say that because, so many people focused on the hardware stuff. And when I went and looked back at sort of everything and what was released, even if you look at software, I mean, Mac OS Sierra is great, but a lot of the features are very sort of niche and specific. They're not really broad, big features that benefit, say, Mac users directly. You've got the Apple Watch unlocking thing and things like that. And so same thing on iOS. I've heard a couple of people comment, and I hadn't really thought about the iPad operating system, but that there just wasn't, there was a lot of nice little touches and enhancements, but nothing, and maybe that's just a factor of the yearly release cycle. I don't know. But Ken, what's your take?
I may have misunderstood the question.
This 2016. What do you think about Apple in 2016? I mean, how
Apple went to bat for me at the first part of the year in 2016 by standing up to the FBI. And I don't mean me personally. I mean Apple went to bat for all of us.
Right.
Is my personal feeling on it. That's the story of 2016. Everything else, They continue grabbing switchers from Android, so they must still be doing something right there. They did not outgrow the computer market as many times this year as they do in most years, but they ended up, you know, with the Mac. But, I mean, outgrowing the computer market, I guess it's kind of particularly insulting because the computer market is not growing quickly. And so when you can't outgrow that, I mean, that's kind of a drag, except now they've come out with something else. And so they should be able to do that for the next few quarters, hopefully. But if not, and I'll get the hate mail this time. It's not that Apple doesn't care about the Mac. But, I mean, what else could Apple sell 4 million of? And everybody would be like, wow, good job. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, they're angling for like 4 million, 4.5 million max each quarter. And that means 4 million, 4.5 million people. And Apple doesn't think in terms of 4 million, 4.5 million people these days. And that may sound terrible and that may sound horrible.
No.
On the other hand, I tell this story all the time. My mom has not had a computer for like 3 or 4 years now because she's had an iPad. And I want to say she actually traded up to a different iPad at one point. I'm not 100% certain about that. I know people who, you know, iPad and iPhone, and that's their involvement in the Mac ecosystem or the Apple ecosystem, excuse me.
That's their involvement in the computer ecosystem.
Exactly. Yeah. It takes care of all of the computing that they need to do. And so, yeah, I mean, for the hardcore, like, I wonder, is there like a long haul trucker podcast out there where somebody's going, well, you know, Mac trucks just really need to get it together because they did this thing on the gear shift this year and I hate it.
I mean,
there are some people to whom, you know, the Mac thing, I mean, Victor is certainly one of them. It sounds like Dave might be one of them as well. It sounds like you might be one as well, Adam.
Yep.
I am right now rocking a 2013 MacBook Air. I have it because a member of my family passed away and there was this extra MacBook Air. And so I bought it off, you know, I tried to buy it actually, but the family just gave it to me. So, and it turns out it's plenty of computer. If you had asked me before I started using it, if I could ever see using a MacBook Air, the answer was no for 5 different reasons. And now I love the thing. And so, yeah, I mean, for the Mac power users, let's say, yeah, they may not be doing enough. On the other hand, for the typical Mac user, they might be. So I don't know. Yeah. But I mean, to me, the big story of 2016 was Apple schooling members of the legislature on why there shouldn't be backdoors in all of our information. We'll see if it sticks.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm with you on some of that, you know, on a lot of that stuff, and especially the focus of, you know, the Mac. The Mac probably isn't Apple's focus very much anymore. I think
which
a lot
is not
of us
to say that there aren't people there. Forgive me for interrupting. Which is not to say that there aren't people there who are dedicated. I do believe Tim Cook and I do believe Phil Schiller when they say yes, the Mac is still very important to us. I mean, I think there are individuals for whom it's important, but I don't think it's the barn burner or the world shaker that it used to be.
I think it's important in a different way than it used to be.
Right.
It used to be the core of the company. It is not a core of the company anymore. I don't think anybody could argue with that looking at any of the numbers or any of the figures. But, you know, it is for sure still important to them. Just won't be as important as frequently. So with that, you know, sort of hopes for 2017 is the second part of this. And we don't need to do it too quickly. Maybe just one thing. For me, I think the number one thing I'm hoping to see more out of Apple is what I saw in the AirPods, which is this sort of refocus on the small things that make the products that they make really magical. I kind of feel like in the last couple years, we haven't had these products that give us that wow, sort of that's really amazing, even though it's a really minor thing experience. So the fact that AirPods just sort of out of the box pair and work and deal with a lot of the Bluetooth headaches that I've always had with different other Bluetooth devices, to me, that creates that sort of magic that the Apple that I love does or used to do. It feels like a lot more, you know, maybe my memory's bad, but I didn't feel like I got a lot of that last year. And so I'm hoping we get more of those moments and experiences. So that's kind of my thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Forgive me for not having heard. You have a pair of the AirPods,
yep.
Adam?
Yeah, okay. Love them.
So this is not on paper they look great. This is you're a fan.
Yeah, I use them I mean, they're in my ears a good part of every day now.
All right.
I had a meeting today with one of my clients is an industrial designer. He does work for some very big tech companies, but not Apple. And I showed him my AirPods, and he went nuts, particularly because this is an industrial designer, over the hinge. Mm-hmm. And he was looking at it under the microscope, and he's like, there was a lot of thought that went into those AirPods if you start really thinking about it.
Yeah, it's a tiny little thing. And that's the kind of magic that, you know, it's the product focus. It's the, like, all the little details, you know, little minor things that other companies would not have maybe thought about, you know, like the pausing the music when you take it out of your ear. It's a little thing, but it makes so much sense when you think about it. But most people wouldn't think about it. So I want to see Apple doing more of that. And it just feels like they haven't been doing that. So I don't know if there's anything else to add or if we just want to move on to Siri.
Oh, I'll just add one thing that I'm looking kind of in the same vein that what you just said is that they find some of that magic in some of the processes and materials that they use in things like iPhone 8. You know, if there is some really things behind the curtain that are happening that are going to wow us in those little ways that pertain to especially materials usage in both the glass and the materials that are going to be used in the next phone. I'm really excited to see what is done there because there's clearly room, you know, for improvement just for the consumer to just go, gosh, I don't even have to think about dropping my phone or scratching my phone or things like that. So that's where I hope some real magic is happening as well.
All right, let's talk about, I want to hit some of the stories. We've been hearing this week a little bit about iOS 8 and specifically enhancements maybe coming to Siri. So things like improved speech recognition, better contextual understanding, and more importantly, I think leveraging some of the artificial intelligence and machine learning skills that Apple's picked up through some of their acqui-hires, I think, over the past year or so. And one thing that I am particularly hoping is going to happen with Siri, I mean, because all this stuff, I think, makes sense. You know, Siri needs to understand us better. She needs to be able to be a little bit smarter. But the one area where I think some of Apple's competitors, specifically Amazon and Alexa, sort of have an edge currently is in complete voice interaction. So having the interface actually be your voice and not sort of falling back on, oh, I've got this screen in your pocket, so I can just display you some information rather than relay that information in sort of a conversational or intelligent way. So I'm curious to get your guys' take. I mean, it seems like this is something that Apple should be focusing on. They need to focus on. And to me, something like that feels like, again, they've neglected for a while.
Is it neglect or is it that they've been trying to figure out how to do it without while safeguarding privacy at the same time? I'm not saying that's why. I'm asking is, do you suppose that might be why?
It could be. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the bits of speculation. I guess the only place that I fall down on that is that it feels to me like there's a lot they could still do locally with a lot more sort of artificial intelligence and things like that that they haven't done. And I always have one example that I always fall back on, but it's probably the most nitpicky example that I have, but it's something that I really want the system to be able to do is when I have a meeting in my calendar and it's at a location and I've taken the time to put the map data, location data into that entry, I don't understand why I can't ask Siri, hey, how long is it going to take me to get to my next meeting? You ask that question, she has no clue. And all of that data is present and available on my device without having to go any place. So
I got one even worse for you. Today was a meeting day. I was driving around and I said, get directions to my next appointment.
Yes.
And it says, yesterday you had an appointment at 2:30. That was the response.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I did it again and it got my dictation exactly right, but it did not give me directions to my next appointment. How common would that be?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, that's the one I was kind of talking about. The time is the same thing, falls under the same thing, but that's exactly the one scenario. And that's just one scenario. I mean, there's other little things like that. But, you know, taking into account more of the data and information. And granted, you know, to your point, Ken, that stuff's really hard to do and do it with maintaining privacy. So it could just be, look, we didn't know it. We have been trying to crack this nut and it just hasn't. It's just not working for us yet, right?
So. See, there's a thing that's been happening to me, though, since I don't know if it was with iOS 10 or if it was before that. But, like, so I noticed one day when I looked down, I left my house, went to the grocery store, got back in the car, was looking for music to play, and something had popped up that said, traffic is light, it'll take you 7 minutes to get home.
Right.
And then, like, a week or two later, I was visiting my mom. And I was out to dinner with a friend of mine and got back in my car and looked at my phone and it said, traffic is light, should be 15 minutes to get back to mom's. And that's interesting because I didn't tell it that I was staying here. It's just after a couple of days, it's like, oh, okay, well, he's very far from home. He's parked his car here like the past 2 days. I'm guessing that's where he's headed. And so, I mean, it's getting better on some level, but not the Siri part. You're right. The actual conversation part is weird, and yet the artificial intelligence part, or I don't know, the learning part of it.
Machine learning, yeah.
Yeah, the machine learning, I mean, is working on an iOS level. It is getting better on an iOS level because I don't think I ever did a setting saying, hey, figure out where I'm staying and then tell me about it. It just kind of picked up on that. Well, I mean, I must have location services turned on, obviously, but I mean, aside from that, I mean, it sort of intuited that part.
It's deducing based on you've got probably address data in there. I don't know if you've attached mom as a thing. I do it for my mom's listing and my contacts, so Siri knows who my mom is and presumably where she lives. And so it makes sense. The learning part is it was intuitive enough to know, oh, he's been in this area for an extended period of time. He must be staying.
Right. I didn't get in my car and it said traffic is light. It'll take you 12 hours to get home.
Right.
Right.
That's interesting.
So, the more conversational part, though, you're right. Because you ask Siri a question, you then want to be able to follow that up with another question without having to state all of the proper nouns explicitly again.
And how long
would that take? I mean, how long would that take should not be something that would, you know, stymie it. Right. And yet, yeah, it does.
Yeah. So, and this just comes up because I've been hearing so many of my tech friends and people going on and on about specifically Amazon Alexa. Alexa has a much better PR than Siri. So Apple needs to focus on Siri's PR image a little bit. But everybody seems to just love it. And the common thing I'll get is, the Echo is so much more intelligent, or Alexa is so much more intelligent than Siri is. And when I sort of stepped back from it, because I got what they were saying, and I have an Echo now, and I've played around with it. And in playing around with it, the capabilities are pretty similar to what Siri has. Where it's smarter, I think, comes from is you ask Siri a question, and in a lot of cases, the response is, oh, I found this on the web, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that you could click a link on your phone and you could go to a website and you could get a lot of detailed information. Alexa doesn't have that luxury. There's no screen for it to go to. So by design, Amazon's engineers had to figure out a way to handle those queries just in voice. And so it's doing the same thing. It's going out and it's finding the answer somewhere on the web or in some database. The difference is it's then taking that, parsing it, maybe using some AI and machine learning to put together, here's a little bit of the information that you were looking for. You know, here is the data, and it's speaking it back to you. So to a human, that comes across as, oh, that's really smart, right? Intelligence. Whereas Siri comes across as, oh, you didn't know the answer, so you're just sending me to the web.
I think it's something more than that, too, because... And this is partly unfair because it's apples and oranges. The Echo is plugged into the wall. So it's got multiple beamforming microphones, better speaker, and 100% power from AC at all times. Sure. whereas the iPhone or Apple Watch or whatever needs to be battery conscious. But the fact is the Echo, I think, is more responsive to your voice and understands you better and faster generally. So that's my experience.
Speed performance, and, yes.
And to that, to me, that's what Siri really needs more than even more than new features is it needs to be lightning quick. Remember when we got the first iPhone and you would scroll and it would scroll so fast sometimes that you got a like a grid behind it, but the scroll kept up. And once it caught up, it showed you the words and you knew that the computer was keeping up with you, even if it couldn't get all the data on the screen.
Sure.
And I think we need to feel that way about Siri. And that to me, that is, having used both devices, it made me realize that's the reason why I don't use Siri as much as I do, is because of the delay and some inconsistency.
I don't know. Maybe I'm the outlier. I use Siri quite a bit. I mean, I use it a lot. And I find the more that I use it, the more I want to use it. And again, that comes back to this PR problem I think that Apple has in a certain degree, because early Siri was a little clunky and kludgy, and I've talked to a lot of people who say this too, is like, I tried Siri, the experience didn't work for me, and I've just kind of never gone back to it. So even as Apple has been able to sort of improve things along the way, because out of the gate it fell down for some people, a lot of people aren't going back to it. And I don't know how Apple solves that problem. It's interesting you mentioned the you know, being plugged in the wall thing, because the other thing that we've heard a lot of people asking about is, you know, does Apple need to release a standalone Siri box for your house? You know, should it be something that's integrated into the living room? And I think that could be very cool. An interesting sort of argument maybe against that to some degree, or maybe this is, again, an apples and oranges comparison. We had a conversation on the Mac show earlier today, and everybody almost wholeheartedly agreed that Siri on the Mac, as much as everybody wanted that, kind of doesn't benefit a lot of people and doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
You know, Adam, you touched upon something that I think it's really right on in that I think where things like Alexa are succeeding in this PR thing that you're saying is that Alexa does such a good job in taking some use cases that are so easy for us to relate to, you know, basic tasks, some general knowledge, you know, hey, give me today's news briefing. Well, you know, today's news briefing, they intentionally take you right to an NPR, to something that's very predictable, but it works almost instantly and it gives you the information that you want. So you feel good about that. Same thing, I think, with use cases, you know, such as obviously shopping for them, but even music, you know, I use Amazon Music too. And what it knows about my music taste and so on, it makes it really easy for me to navigate through that, through timers. So I think the experience becomes better because you feel more connected to it. And then there's a little real PR things like letting you change the name to computer for, you know, us ultimate geeks and so on. Those things matter too to people. And so I think this is where, at least for now, because of technology, I think Alexa's eating Siri's lunch. I don't use Siri because it frustrates me so much to have to wait for a response, never mind to get a response, but simply to wait for one. It drives me nuts.
Somebody posted a video on the Mission Log Twitter feed earlier today. There's a part of the episode that we watch for this week where one of the characters says, "Computer."
Right.
Let's try a little music, and then the thing on their mantle popped on and said, "Okay, here's Maroon 5." Yep. Which I thought was very funny. Now, you have to be a certain kind of geek. I mean, you basically have to be watching a lot of Star Trek for that to constantly throw your Echo off. But I thought it was really funny. It was amazing that it worked that well, actually.
Right.
Well, we all had that same problem initially, right? When we were like, we would be on an Apple related show talking about Siri, mm-hmm. and we would talk about HEY Siri, and then all of a sudden, you know, our shows would stop because Siri was waiting to hear what was going to be said next.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the interesting thing about the Echo, where that's going to be even more of a problem, is I've heard many people comment that they have them near or relatively near their television, right? Because a lot of these things live in people's living rooms. So it's probably the keyword becomes a thing. And actually, my Echo was requested to be removed from my living room because it was constantly going off when no one was saying anything to it.
Mm.
So those beamforming microphones are great at picking up at sound, but sometimes I think they're a little bit too good. And we played with all the different keywords before people email me. We had to change the default one for specific reasons, but tried them all. And, you know, the blue light would come on and it would be listening. And certain members of my family sort of found that creepy.
So. Yeah, the one I really want to try is the Google Assistant, because I mean, in my personal life, that's who knows the most about me and my, and it could do the most predictive things, like what Ken, you know, explained. And so that's the one I haven't tried, and I would love to try it, because, you know, they have the biggest shot at being able to really nail what I need as an, as a purely as an assistant. And right. And maybe I'll get a chance to do that, but I haven't yet.
So just to wrap this up, and then we'll get to a couple picks and then we'll get out of here. What's your guys' take? I mean, do you guys think Apple should do a standalone version of Siri, like an Echo or a Google? Is it Google Home? Like, does that seem like a product they should be looking at creating in 2017 or something?
I think they should be making that more than a car right now.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's space that Apple should be in. Absolutely. I mean, Apple's always been kind of an ecosystem. And this is a product that, that Amazon should get full credit for, you know, pioneering and sticking out there in the world. But what's Apple really good at, gang? You know, finding a product that already exists and coming up with a better design and a better way of solving the problem. It seems to me like this is ripe for them.
Yeah.
Let me ask you. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to comment. I mean, the one thing that I'm finding, I already mentioned earlier, you know, I'm finding that I'm wearing my AirPods quite frequently and leaving them in quite a bit, because one, they're just sort of comfortable for me. And two, it gives me access to Siri when I'm just walking around the house. So to the point of, you know, being a standalone box versus having something in my ear, I don't, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Obviously, if it's a, if it's an in-room thing, then it's available to more people. But I see the benefit of it because I'm using Siri more because of the AirPods. You know, I can walk away from my desk, and if I want to add an appointment or take a phone call or take a phone call and then add an appointment, I can do all that from, you know, a double tap on my ear, which is kind of a cool thing. And she hears me better because the mic's right there.
How much better does Siri have to be before Apple actually does that, before they make a standalone device?
I think it's probably going to happen in 2017. I'm curious if it'll be integrated into an updated Apple TV or if it'll be a separate device is kind of where the only thing that I'm wondering about. You know, it seems like you could put those two things together and have the always on listening thing almost be an add on or an extra for the same price you're buying the Apple TV, and you kind of get two birds for, you know, two parts of the ecosystem covered for one purchase. If that makes sense.
Yeah, remind me though, how much is the Echo? Do you know off the top of your head?
Well, if you get the Dot, they're already down to $50. If you get the Dot right, without the speaker, so you got to bring your own Bluetooth speaker. So if you add a $50 Bluetooth speaker, you're looking at $100. It does have a little speaker built into it, but it's not very good, especially if you want to listen to music. But
yeah,
it does.
But I mean, you're not getting it. You're not getting into an Apple TV for less than $160, right? So I mean, even if you built that functionality in, that almost feels like that's.
I think that's artificially inflated, though, right?
Well, yeah, but they're not going to lower the price to compete with the Echo or the Dot.
I think they could get in the $99 price range.
Hmm. Interesting.
I mean, they started there. I think they could get back there. No?
I don't know. Maybe.
Do I have any backup here? What do you guys think, Victor? Dave, I mean.
I don't know. I hope they, I don't know. I was just sitting here kind of thinking, if they made an Echo type device, you know, what I wanted. And like Victor, I've got most of my stuff in iCloud. So one of the things that makes me nuts about these things is I can't ask it what my schedule is because it doesn't know.
Right.
So, you know, I think it could work, but like, I'm also thinking about, there seems to be a lot of news lately about Apple and Sonos and how, you know, you see Sonos products in the Apple store. You know, maybe there's all sorts of back-end stuff that's going on. I have to see the product, but I expect that it would be pretty good. So I hope they do get in the space. And
yeah,
but it's an Apple product, so I can't tell you it's going to be under $100, especially the first version.
Yeah, but there's a lot of us, I think, that would pay it too, though. I mean, to your point, Dave, I live in iCloud too with all my data. So, you know,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say the Echo doesn't really help me with schedule and all that, those sorts of things either. So,
I mean, my experience with the Echo is it's really great if you understand how it wants the word said. I mean, there's a very particular like script that you need to use to get it to respond. And I don't think it's, you know, the end all be all in any stretch of the imagination. In fact, honestly, I don't think any of these services are really all that great yet. And we're kind of in early days. I'm not ready to, you know, just like hand over my digital assistant, everything to that. Right. But I sure hope the day comes. And I feel like we're going to have to get through these kind of years of figuring it out to get there. So Apple should be swinging with the hardware and the software as hard as they can, because other people are already doing it.
Yep. Ken, did you have something to add, or do we want to do some picks? Or as I call them, things of the moment. So I try and throw out, and if you don't have something, that's fine. But just something cool that you enjoy using, you own. Maybe you've got it recently. Maybe you've had it for years. It doesn't really matter. We'll just go around the table. Does everybody here have a pick? I should have asked before we all set.
Yeah, I think yes. So.
Okay, cool. So we'll start with, let's start with you, Victor. What do you got for us?
I'm going to keep it pretty simple. I've been a big fan of Thunderbolt for a long time, and friends over at OWC offer a couple of great docks. I have both the traditional Thunderbolt 2 dock, and now because I have a MacBook, I bought one of the USB-C versions, and these things are fantastic, especially if you're going to be, you know, in traveling, certainly, or in the home. I'm about to go on a traveling adventure. I'm going to be a full-time traveler, and you know, using the smaller form factor stuff, and this is going to take care of a huge gap for me that I'm going to be missing by not having my traditional desktop and, you know, myriad of hard drives. All that's going to go away. So having a nice dock where I can really take care of some business in a small form factor is a great way to do it. And myself, I've had very good success with these, and I've paid for all of them.
Those OWC docks are really cool. They always have been. I really need to pick the one up for my 2015 MacBook. I've got wires hanging off the, you know, a bunch of wires hanging off the side. It'd be nice to clean that stuff up. So cool. Ken?
Well, I didn't have one, and then you said, just talk about something cool that you like, but now I can't find it in the App Store. So I'm not sure what the point is. Back when I was doing iChart Magazine, so like a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was, you know, had a real need for images and a good way to actually edit them. I mean, Pixelmator's, you know, great, but then I just kind of wanted to like do a screen grab or do like, you know, grab part of the screen or something. And I think Victor Agreda Jr. actually posted something online.
I can help you with this too, by the way. Sorry to cut in there.
Oh, that's okay. Called Voila, V-O-I-L-A. Mm-hmm. And what it is it is a, I mean, it's, you can do screen grabs, you can do just grab sections, you can grab them in different shapes. I mean, it really, if you have a need to just really quickly grab a graphic, it's fantastic for that. I'm thinking about things like, you know, financial charts and stuff. I mean, because everybody knows how to just grab a picture and drag it in. But, you know, graphs or things that are not available to you as just like one graphic that you can grab. And I've actually found a reason to start using it again, because one of my Patreon perks is a newsletter that goes out to people every day. And occasionally I just want to change the header. You know, like when Apple had their October event, I wanted to use that graphic. And the easiest way to get it the shape I wanted, the size I wanted, it was just to, you know, drag across it. And there it was. So that one's pretty cool, and I would love to tell you how much it is, but I can't even find it.
I will tell you, because here, I will help you out. So I did a quick Googling. It's actually from the folks over at Global Delight. They make some really cool stuff, and they've upgraded it and renamed it, which is why you can't find it. It's actually called Capto now.
Capto?
C-A-P-T-O, like Capto Capture, but with an O. Capto.
Okay. Does it say how much it is?
And you can buy it for $29.99. And if you have Voila, you can upgrade for... Oh, it wants me to put in my registration code. I don't see an upgrade price. I'm assuming less than $29.99.
Interesting. I guess I'll be finding out later tonight then whether I can upgrade using my registration code but having bought it through the Mac App Store.
Oh, yeah, that I don't know about. But if you don't want to do that, I'll give you a bonus pick because Set App is now out from the folks over at MacPaw. And for those of you who don't know what Set App is, it's a new app subscription service. It is $10 a month, and it's sort of like Netflix for like Mac applications. So you pay $10 a month, and unlike maybe like an Adobe subscription where you're just getting Adobe software, this is 60 different apps from a bunch of different developers, and Capto is part of Set App.
61 now, Adam. Every day there's another.
Yeah, they keep adding more. But they have other apps like that I've recommended many times, like Clean My Mac, iStat Menus.
Ulysses is on there.
Ulysses. You know, and some of these apps are standalone, like a $50 app. iThoughts HD, Marked. I know Rapid Weaver's in here, Kronos. I mean, there are a ton of really great apps in here, and you could have them all for $10 a month. And you don't have to install them all. You get to go in and pick and choose. And so a lot of these that are in here are great because I've had little utilities like I need for just a specific task or a specific moment. Base is one of these apps. It lets you open MySQLite databases. Like, not a lot of people need to do that. I'm a developer. Occasionally I've had to do it. I paid for Base just to use it like one or two times. Now it's just part of this bundle, so I can open it, launch it, use it, and then put it away till the next time I need it. Plus you get all these other great apps. So that may be another way, Ken. You might want to look at that versus just upgrading straight to Capto itself, whatever works out best for you. But it's a nice, great option. And so if a Set App just came out of beta, it was in beta. It's now available to the public. And I think they have a 30-day free trial. So you can like test it out for 30 days. So maybe do that. Do the Set App trial. You can get Capto, see if it's something you're going to use, and then go ahead and do your upgrade.
Interesting.
So there you have it. So maybe I should just make Set App my pick.
That was pretty good.
Yep.
I hope that works. And, you know, it's a really great way for software developers to make money off their software, too, if it works. So,
yeah, I've talked to a number of developers who are participating in this, and they all seem very excited about it. A lot of them kind of feel like, you know, they wouldn't have been able to do a recurring subscription just on their own. So this is a way they can get that in a way that sort of makes sense. So they get recurring revenue, the users get great, you know, a selection of great apps, and it's kind of a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dave, what's your pick?
I am worried about losing stuff, and I have a nice bike, and where I live, I ride my bike around all the time. That's kind of my transportation, and I was thinking, well, what if somebody stole my bike? I wouldn't like that. So I started researching these various tracker devices, like, you know, the Tile, and there's two or three different vendors, and I settled on the Tracker Bravo. It's a TRACKR, and during the holidays they had a deal where you got a handful of them for $100. It was like, I think 10 of these things. So but they're little devices that about a little bigger than a quarter, and it's got a little piezo kind of speaker in it, so you can attach it to something and use an app on your phone to make the speaker go off. So if you attach it to your keys and you can't find your keys, you press the button and your keys start beeping. But it also attaches to the Bluetooth to your phone and keeps track of its location. And they also, there's so many things you can do. You can press there's a little button on it. You can press that and then the phone will beep on your phone. So you can go the opposite direction. So you can track your phone through the tracker. And that Bluetooth thing with location is also kind of like a mesh network where it can look at other trackers and check in through them. So if someone steals my bike, but they get near somebody else with a tracker, then tracker will check in with my bike wherever it's at, which is pretty clever. And, you know, the pricing goes down. Like if you buy one of them, they're like $30, but they go down quite a bit as you buy more of them. So I got this pack of them. I've attached them to the keys of my keys, my wife's keys. I've got one stuck to the underside of the seat on my bicycle. And then I put electrical tape over it. So I'm really tricky. So hopefully a thief won't realize it's there. And I'm putting them now on like my bags, like my backpack and stuff too. And they were very easy to set up. And, you know, I waited. I knew these products were out in the market, but I just hadn't really got around to it. Now that I've spent a little time setting these up, I'm kind of happy knowing I've got this piece of nerdery in my life.
I have one of those on my dog, Dave.
Yeah, that's another good. I mean, there's really a lot of uses for these things. If you could think, I could put a, not really GPS, but I could put an ability to track location on anything in my house. We'll just stop and think about it for a minute, and everybody's got something they probably want to stick one of these on.
Very cool. Yeah, I've heard good things about the trackers as well. Haven't picked one up yet, so check that out. Okay, I'll make sure, I've been taking notes, so I'll make sure I get links to everybody's picks and all this stuff in the show notes at mattcast.com. But I think with that, I think we're kind of done for this latest Amigos episode. Thanks, guys, for hanging out for a little bit. Before we leave, let's go back around the table. We'll go reverse from how we did our picks, starting with you, Dave. Let people know what you're up to these days, where they can find you and follow you and all that stuff.
I'm just having fun on the internet still. You can find me at maxsparky.com. And I've got the Mac Power Users, which are at Relay FM. And I also have a new show that I'm doing with Jason Snell called The Free Agents, where we talk about being an independent worker and how to make that work for you. And that's also on Relay FM. So you can find both shows on relay.fm.
Very, very cool. Thanks, Dave. Ken?
Of course, Mac OS Ken still. And a few months ago, I started a show with the guys from Secure Mac called The Checklist. We're kind of going through and hopefully giving people easy ways to take care of a bunch of security stuff that they may never have taken care of before. So it's been everything from you're getting ready to sell your Mac, how do you make it good to go, or the five things to do to secure your Mac from the beginning. We just did one actually that was about physical data protection, which was actually one that I had suggested. It's like, okay, so I'm walking around in the world and I've got a VPN, I've got all this stuff, but you know, how do I make sure that somebody's not looking over my shoulder? So things about like locking up your devices and screen, you know, protectors and all that kind of stuff. So that's been kind of fun. And you can find that the best way to do that is just search for Secure Mac on iTunes, all one word, SecureMac. Search for Secure Mac and you'll find the show. I think we're up to like show 21 now. So it's been a while. But yeah, I'd love it if everybody checked it out.
Very cool. Well, thanks again. And last but certainly not least, Victor Cahiao, where can everybody find you?
Well, right now I'm doing a show with Kelly Gamont called Three Nerd Things, and you can find that at the number 3nerdthings.com. And right now we're in a bit of a hiatus because I had to take some time off to go to Cuba and to take care of some health issues with my wife's family. But we're going to be back on very soon. And so you can find me there, certainly, and go check it out. It's like a half-hour show where Kelly and I just talk about three things that we just love that are super nerdy in anywhere. It can be text-based movies. It doesn't matter. It's a really fun show to do, and it's really easy for us to do. So we have a lot of fun doing it. And I'm going to be traveling the U.S. full-time starting June or July. Mary and I are retired, and we're going to be living in an Airstream full-time. So coming to a town near you sometime in the future.
Wow, that's very cool. You're living one of my dreams, Victor.
I can't wait to see the pictures you start posting next year when you do this.
It's going to be interesting. I'm thinking about Mary and I starting a YouTube channel about the experience. So we'll see if that happens or not.
When you say full time, do you mean like full time for a year or do you mean like full time?
Full time until the wheels fall off or until we find a place that we love so much that we have to stop.
Wow.
So we're going out just completely blind and just doing it. We're just doing it. And it's super exciting and scary.
Well, I'm sure we will hear more and more about it. And hopefully put together a YouTube channel. I'd love to watch that. Because, again, this is one of my lifelong dreams. So maybe I'll get there someday when I'm set to retire. That's very exciting, Victor. Very cool.
Thanks.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later. So there you have it. That's how we do these Amigos episodes. I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any comments or feedback, of course, you can always email me if you want to weigh in on this conversation. But with that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Do want to remind you that we are still having the MacCast AirPod giveaway. I'm giving away a set of AirPods. How can you become eligible? Well, if you haven't been listening to the last few episodes, go back and listen to those. On the past three episodes of the MacCast, I gave out a secret word in each episode. So go find out what that secret word is and then head to MacCast.com/AirPods. There'll be a form there. Just fill out your email address and each of the three secret words. And I am going to be picking a person to give away the AirPods to from the list of people who get the three secret words correct. And I will be giving those away, the AirPods away, and notifying the lucky recipient on February 14th. So get your guesses in before that date and you will be eligible for the MacCast AirPod giveaway. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can go get more information, find out about all of Smile's great applications at smilesoftware.com/MacCast. And Gazelle. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CashFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at BackbeatMedia.com. As always, I love getting feedback and hearing from you. Part of the thing that makes the MacCast work is you and the great MacCast community. So if you have a comment on this episode or any other episode of the MacCast, or maybe you have a suggestion for a future topic or just a question that maybe the community can help you out with, we welcome your emails, your audio comments. You can send those to MacCast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything we talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, including the picks for this episode, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me online between shows, you can find me on social media. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast, or participate in the MacCast Google Plus community. That's at google.com/plusMacCast, and that's the plus symbol. Looking forward to seeing you there, but until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.